good?
Yep.
I'd like to call this meeting to order. May 22nd, 2018, Planning Commission for Cedar Hills.
He needs to pull the mic.
It is now 7:04.
We're really going to need to hear you guys talking into the mic.
All right, I'll work on that better.
Still not
going to begin with, we're going to make a small adjustment to the agenda. I propose, as we have several people in attendance who are also presenting this evening in other cities, I propose we change the order to schedule items as follows. We'll begin with public comment, then move on to what was item 6.
Did you bring in public hearing sheets?
Item 7B, item 8, then item 3, 7A, 4, 5, 9, and 10. The numbers sound a little confusing, but I think it will make more sense as we work our way
okay,
through.
Okay, that is...
I want to take a motion on my also.
I move that the agenda be reflected as we just described.
My plan.
Any discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Oh, and I will recognize the voting members tonight. Steve, right? Mm-hmm. Stephen Thomas, Jared, you go for that? And Jared Anderson. Thank you. So to begin, we will have public comment. Public comment portion is not pertaining to any particular agenda item. It is an opportunity for anyone in the audience to have 3 minutes to share anything that is on their mind. We don't have anyone signed up, but we'll allow time if anybody would like to make a comment. If not, we'll close that portion of the meeting. We'll move now to what was item 6, a review recommendation on the creation of the PB1 zone. Chandler.
So the property in question tonight is located at 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive. It's commonly referred to as the Smart Piece. It's about 11.4 acres. I'm going to pull it up here in just a second. Pull this on now. But as many of you are well aware, the city has been, we've been working with the developer on this piece for, let's say, close to 6 years now. It's been close to 6 years at this point, and there was a this is where the original Rosegate project was proposed. Now, the Rosegate project, as you may recall, was a 291-unit congregate care facility. I believe in November of 2015, the council gave preliminary approval for that with, I think there was 14 conditions. Those conditions were challenged to the state property rights ombudsman, rule issued an advisory opinion. For those of you who are interested in reading that, it's advisory opinion 192 on the state ombudsman's website. But based on the result of that advisory opinion, the city and the developer have gone back to the table and are worked out a settlement agreement, a development agreement on what to do with that land. Now, part of that settlement agreement is requires the city, well, not requires the city, but requires the city to vote on whether or not to adopt a new zone. And that zone is going to be referred to as the PD1, the Planned Development 1 Zone. That Planned Development Zone is a result of the settlement agreement between Cedar Hills Farmland LLC and the City of Cedar Hills. The settlement agreement has been reached between the two parties, and it is yet to be fully executed. There's been some minor issues between the signatories that need to be worked out, but I think those are done at this point. But the city has agreed to consider the adoption of this PD1 zone. The zone is exclusive to this parcel. It's not applicable to any other parcel in the city. If you have been able to go through the language in the code, in the proposed code, the 10-4C, it stipulates that it's pertaining to that settlement agreement, to that development agreement. Anyway, the zone is set up in a way that it matches the flow of language of the other zone while at the same time meeting the intent of the settlement agreement, allowing the developer to do what has been mutually agreed upon between the city and the developer, namely an 80 unit single family subdivision in the SC1 zone, as well as a small partial aspect on it. From the zone that you guys have, the zone that's been booked, that's in your packet, and just going through it, there's a couple things I wanted to point out for the Planning Commission's benefit and as well as for the benefit of the public, and then make one change, I believe. Under 10-4C5 access requirements, we require that every lot be accessible from a city street. In this case, the streets in the proposed subdivision are private. And so, where it's on your, you guys have the edited version, the markup version. In there it says, except as illustrated in the concept plan, each lot shall abut upon and have direct access to a private street. They're all private, all of the lots will be accessible to a private street. And then I want to strike out that language that says constructed to city standards. Due to the fact that they are private roads, they are not required to meet the city standards. Those road profiles are dictated by the settlement agreement. So they are not built to city standards. I want to strike that out. And then on 10-4C6 location requirements, there's some comment on that side setback where it requires a 5-foot side setback on an interior lot and a corner lot would be 10 feet off of the side setback. There's some discussion about whether that 5 feet is flexible, meaning like it adds up to 10 on both sides, so you have 2 on one side, 8 on the other, to get more of a side yard. That's something for the Planning Commission to consider. And then I think on the last thing I wanted to point, the last thing I wanted to point out was on the dwelling requirements, the design elements, which I'll show later, dictate the design requirements for each building. Namely, the roof pitch, the facade treatments, the minimum square footage of the homes, and prohibited items that you cannot have on home. The height of the building in this zone is 35 feet, same as any other residential zone in the city. And then the off-street parking, it does say not less than 2 off-street parking spaces shall be required. This is also standard for all residential development in city. And then 10-4C9 is a section called the development agreement, and this is unique to this zone, as it's the only zone that's created under a development agreement. You can see the language there, that is proprietary to this zone. So with that being said, what questions can I answer on this? I hope you've had a chance to read through this.
I think what we'd like to do now is have public hearing after the presentation for each item that we have a public hearing scheduled for. And then the commission will deliberate. So I believe on this we have 2 people signed up. The first being Bruce Baird. Would you please state your name, address, and then you'll have 3 minutes for your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm actually counsel for the applicant, Bruce Baird, 2015 South 15 degrees. I'll try to do it in 3 minutes. Usually the applicant is slightly longer, but I won't take much longer than that. First, I want to thank you for moving this up because I'm the person who has to have a great burden and time to put my body armor on to avoid getting shot tonight for the project that's in Draper. Second, I think Trey Chandler did a good job of explaining the history. We have a team here, our land planner is here, Corey Schubert is here. Talk about a developer is here as well. But I did want to talk about this is one of those rare times where a long fight leads to what is probably a much better project for everyone. So I think it's a rare win-win situation that will result from this, and the adoption of this zone is the first stage in that process. While this is the first PD zone in Cedar Hills, I think you will eventually wind up with more PD zones because standard Euclidean zoning doesn't work on infill projects, doesn't work on complicated projects, and you need to create more PD zones. And basically what a PD zone does is that the development agreement and the master plan become the zone. I've used these in a number of cities. I think Orem is to 88 PD zones or something like that. Draper, where I'm going tonight, has somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 commercial special districts. They're used quite frequently, and they're a really good planning tool. You don't have to follow the template for this one in particular, but having that arrow in your quiver, as lawyers always used to say, of being able to do these kinds of smart, non-Euclidean planning things, you're going to find this to be a good tool in the future when you have some unusual projects. The only thing I also want to comment on is I know it sounds like a long time. I thought it was ironic that the picture that was up there was the Acropolis. It sometimes feels that we've been going on for that long. I was at the Acropolis about a year and a half ago, and I didn't sort of have a deja vu feeling about coming down to Cedar Hills. So I know we're asking you to do this on what may seem to be a little bit of a tight timeline, but that's part of the settlement agreement between parties. And the reason it's a tight timeline is because of the last 6 years, which were sometimes not the world's most pleasant, but for the last 3 months, we've worked extremely cooperatively with your staff, your attorney, Mr. Bramhall's here today. Chris and I have known each other and worked together 25 years ago. I was in Salt Lake City. We worked well with the other council, William Hume, and Chandler's been great on this. So there may be some tweaks here and there. I understand there may be some concerns about a little bit of landscaping here or there, a little bit of architectural treatment on the back of some of the buildings. Those are details that I'm certain that we can work out as part of the final design guideline. I never usually need a microphone, but as part of the final design guidelines. But other than that, I'll turn it over to whomever, if you want to hear the rest of the applicant team, if you want to just go through that short
we
list.
We need to go through our list.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, next we'd like to hear from Sherry Condi.
My name is Sherry Condi. I live at 4221 West Old Road North. I'm hoping you got a copy of my letter. If you did, you'll see that I have some questions about, as Mr. Baird said, this is a good plan. It's a good plan, but I do feel that it could be better. And I'm assuming that this is the time to bring up issues that I think would make it better. I understand I have 3 minutes here.
Yes.
So as you see, my letter is a little longer. Would it be possible if I just answer the questions quickly and then have Mr. Baird spend the rest of my time answering the questions? Or did he get it?
We'll be asking a lot of those questions in our deliberation. And to be fair, right now we're talking about creating a PD1. The plan for the Cedar Canyon development is actually a different agenda item. And those questions are probably more appropriate to that plan.
Okay, so there was a comment that Chandler mentioned that the settlement agreement is not finalized yet. Is that correct?
It just needs signatures on it.
So that's why it hasn't been released to the public. I find looking at the draft of the PD1 plan, there's quite a bit of references to this agreement. So it's hard for the public to understand what in full is going to happen without being able to see that first. So I would urge the Planning Commission to continue this period so that the public has a chance to read all the details first. Just to finalize, I'm happy that there's an agreement between the city and Cedar Canyon. This will be an asset to the community, especially because it's something brand new in terms of cutting edge technology and human people involved in being part of the neighborhood. It is going to be a wonderful asset to Cedar Hills. Thank you.
If there's anyone else that would like to speak to this issue, I'll give you an opportunity now. If not, we'll finalize the public hearing portion and go to deliberations and questions. start there.
What do you think of it? Let me address something you brought up on the. There, this is under an accelerated timeline. And the reason that is, under the settlement agreement, which I will make public as soon as we have names on paper, there's been kind of one last key that had been worked out, and I think we worked it out and we can get it done very soon. But under the settlement agreement, there are certain performance guarantees that each party would do. And one of those is that if final approval is given by July 31st, the whole plan, and that road, 47th and West, will be completed up to the property. If it's not given by then, and it's up to the city to finish that road, the whole road should profile from the intersection of 2400 south to the property line. So there's a financial incentive for the city, not to mention that this has been in the works for 6 years.
Please, Jim, I wonder if you could speak to the interplay between the design guidelines and the development. It looks like it was intended to be an exhibit, now it's not, and how was it modified and whatnot. So it seems like the design guidelines are something that most people are going to be particularly concerned about.
When you're saying the design guidelines, are you talking about these?
I think so. I mean, I'm looking now in code, looking in particular in 10.4C9, which requires a development agreement, and then makes specific reference to design guidelines.
Yeah, so the design guidelines really stipulate how the look and feel of the subdivision is going to be. So, for example, and I was going to get into this later, but I'll get into it now. You see this is the upper middle lots. These are the lots on the very south end of the property. If I go here, it's these darker yellow lots on the very south end of the property. These are these upper middle lots. The other ones are some of you lots. And then, excuse me, the upper middle lots are everything else in light yellow. I did that backwards. But it's hard to read here for a lot of people, I can understand. But this does give you two renderings of what these buildings could look like. And then under the dimensional requirements, it gives you the setbacks for where the building's located on the property. And then in this square in the bottom left, you have some design elements. So you see a roof pitch requirement. You see a facade treatment where there has to be three design elements on the front, minimum two design elements on each other facade. Minimum square footage requirements, looks like it's 1,400 square feet for these homes, and plus a two-car garage, and that's per city code. And then prohibited items is vinyl siding. So you see, some of the stuff that's called out in specifically in the, it's 10.4C8. Some of those design guidelines are referenced here in the code. But I think my feeling on this one is that it allows us to know what kind of homes we're getting. You know exactly what it is going to be built there. Additionally, in the settlement agreement, it says there's a minimum of three design elements on the front. It does call out that there can be no more than three stuck over. So it does go into a little bit further detail as far.
Right. You had brought up in particular about the construction of the streets.
Right.
Although they don't have to be constructed to city standards because they're private, they do have to have approval from. Yes.
Correct. I'll get into that one. Can we punt on that question until the subdivision discussion?
Yes.
And would that be the appropriate place to talk about sidewalks?
Yes. Sure. If you're going to speak about something specific to the subdivision, let's wait until we're talking about the subdivision. Otherwise, let's get to talk about the road.
That was in the
code. Yeah. But we'll talk about that exactly. I have my notes.
And then the setbacks? Later or now?
Now.
The 5 feet on each side or 8-10?
Yeah.
I have a concern.
Sure.
8-10 means two people can have 2 foot and have buildings 4 feet apart.
Right.
I have a real problem with that. I don't know how that makes fire code and live places for those kinds of clearances.
I just think that up there as a.
That would be.
Yeah,
that's true. I guess our minimum is 5 feet.
Let's talk about that. So right now it's written interior lots, all dwelling and main building should be set back not less than 5 feet from any side lot line. porch may extend into side yard setback area no more than 2 feet.
I'm sorry, what section is that?
It's under 10.4C6. So that 2 feet wouldn't project any further than an eve.
For the porch, yes.
And now, the question is, down back over here. So the side yard standard is 5 feet on either side, and that's exactly what we have in the Cedars subdivision. It's adjacent to the golf course here. The only unique thing is there's a discussion of having flexible setbacks. We have those elsewhere in the city, just that they're usually a minimum of 10 feet by 24. It's a little bit bigger.
Right. Is this something in the last year that the developer has requested specifically, or?
Yes. Yes. And you could, based on language from fire code, fire rating buildings, you could require a minimum setback from an adjacent home. Say, okay, if it's 2 feet on one side, that home on the other side has to be a minimum of 6 feet away.
We're always going to have to require a fire.
Yeah, that's basic. Is the rest of the fire. Same thing with the building code. That's it.
Been all the way through the CNRs, but with such small boundaries on site, lots of things to be, then is it going to be something like, is this maintained by the
private lots?
Okay.
I'm going to find some gal, please. Okay.
Oh, Jim, one thing, the private roads, the road base and everything else will be built to city standards. It's the widths.
Yes.
So the quality of the roads will be just as good as city roads. The width will be a little different. That's always an issue for cities. I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you. That was, no. So you understand, like, the depth of the asphalt and the depth of the road base is going to be city standard, but the width of the road profile is not. And that is also common. So a lot of HOAs have private streets. In those cases, the streets are maintained so far by the HOA.
The only other district friend, back to one of your earlier comments about this code section being unique to this parcel. Is that what you said, or did I miss
it? Yes, it is unique to this parcel. It cannot be adopted by another parcel.
So tell me that it seems like subsequent developers could apply for some type of zone designation on another parcel.
They could.
They'd have to meet certain requirements. They have to go through the whole application process and whatnot. But just so the record is clear, this section is not limited to what we need. It's only this particular parcel.
This PD1 zone is unique to this parcel. If somebody came and asked for something similar, like Mr. Barrett said, there would be a new creation of a new PD1 zone for that exact parcel. So they would be free to their own development agreement because they're not signatories to this one.
But not a new code section or a new ordinance.
It would be a new ordinance, a new creation of a new code.
So what language in this ordinance ties it to that parcel? I can't find it.
Is the development agreement mentioned?
The property should, it references the development agreement, which
10.4CB.
Yeah, the fee limits it to this particular piece of property. And just to let you know, Jared, that's how a quorum does it. They're very specific in that. And some people are worried about the old phrase spot zoning, but Utah case law on spot loading zoning is doesn't prohibit spot zoning. I say one zone a lot of times. So.
Yeah, my concern is more to some future event where someone got a hold of transcript for this meeting and said, why can't we have the same zoning?
And the answer to that is zoning is upzoning is 100% discretionary politically, and nobody has ever challenged this upzoning case in the history of the state of Utah, nor will they ever win an upzoning case. And I say that as a developer's lawyer. So upzoning is discretionary for the city council. There's case law, Draper City versus Harmon City versus Draper, whatever it is. Plus, we've codified it in 2005 that zoning decisions are essentially unchallenging.
Thank you for helping me out.
Boys, I'm just stating the truth. Even if it doesn't help me all the time.
Any other questions on the PD1 zone?
Most of my questions are.
Can we do our ABCs?
I'll entertain a motion.
To recommend the consideration of the Sun Belt zone as presented by Stephen Wilson staff. To locate it on the approximately 12,600 West Seattle Drive as part of the settlement agreement between Seattle Fireland LLC and the city, subject to following.
There's one change.
There's one change.
Identifying private roads.
Yeah, identifying.
But we, I actually, you know what? We can leave that in. I have to correct my change.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Right. All right. Next agenda item.
Which is?
Formerly 7B.
Yeah. So this is a review action on amendments to the official zoning map of Cedar Hills.
Are we done? This is this whole road? No. I don't think so. What are we on now? Are we on concept and preliminary? Really?
Yeah, it is.
Is this rezoning?
Or?
Yeah. Seven.
So the property in question on this map is located right there. So the corner, this is Drive. This is 4600 West. This is the 12 acres right there. So this is, as I said, part of the settlement agreement. The next logical step is that you create the zone and you do the rezone itself, and then we'll discuss the actual plan to the subdivision.
Right. I'm still confused.
Any questions on this?
This is a publicly here's session. Do we have any comment or?
This is going to
stay
be
here for the direction.
I see one overlay. No, this isn't the overlay.
Never tried to
this is the commercial, and this is the. It's
mapping
part
that
of
last end of the ground.
So the overlay zone is.
Anyone right else?
And that
yes.
would be this area that comes over here.
Is this the time now for a list of questions?
Yeah, I think one more, next one.
I don't understand what we're doing.
Okay, discussion.
So we're now talking about the development right now. So it's still part of that same agenda item.
All right, I'll entertain a motion.
I don't know what we're doing, so I'm hoping this will help me.
I move that we recommend the proposed changes to the City Council related to the official Cedar Hills zoning map, amending portions of the SC1 zone to be rezoned as PD1 and then the zoning map to reflect these changes.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
All right. All right, so Cedar Canyon, this is the Cedar Canyon subdivision. You can see it from that little peach colored box I pointed to earlier. This is a zoomed in close up. The zone consists of 80 single family homes. You can see them all throughout. And then in this northwest corner is a portion dedicated to commercial use. It's not, it's still based on what we hope drafted this all up. There's no approval right now for a building here. It's simply that this is remaining, it's not in the SC1 zone, but it's subject to the provisions of the SC1 zone. And so it still goes through all the same approval requirements and meet all of the adopted code for SC1 zone in 10.6A of the code. So it's still had that dwelling wood. And when they come to build this building, there will be an approval process for it. So what we're talking about really is the zone itself. On May 11th, we had a site plan meeting. The site plan meeting, and Chairman Grant is there. We had some time for us to receive input from a number of significant sources, namely the fire department, public works, planning, the engineer. And we completed our first engineer review of this plan set, which was done about 4 days ago, and that has been a list of items to be addressed. And sent off to the developer. So, I guess the timeline for approval, the engineer red lines will need to be adopted or incorporated before the June 19th council meeting, which will be the next council meeting that this council will go on. And like I said before, final approval must be given by July 31st. So if I can just kind of dive into some of these red lines, not all of them, it's an extensive list, so I'm not going to but some of the ones that I feel like I want to highlight or maybe seek some clarification on. There's a couple places where easements are necessary. We're going to have some utility lines that run through the commercial area. We're going to need to see some easements added through there, just for the record. Let's see. What's the big ones? Per city standard, there's going to be a fence that surrounds the property. It's going to be a concrete fence on this west side and then a vinyl fence around the remainder. Per city standards, other than this southern border here, where it's adjacent to a sidewalk, it will need to be 1 foot off of the sidewalk, so that will allow people to snow plow and not put the snow in the street. So it just needs to make that minor change. This was another concern that we had between the engineer and planning staff was site distances around corners. I think some things to be concerned about are typically we require on a corner from the point of curvature going both sides back, we measure 45 feet, 40 feet?
45.
And then in that triangle is a limited building area. Well, these are really tight turns. I'd like to maybe see some drops of what the site triangles look like, and then possibly have a discussion on dropping the speed limit in this zone to 15 miles an hour in order to accommodate a smaller site triangle. Okay. And then this lane, are you guys right now? This road right here, and a lot of these are minor changes. This road right here is Wildflower Lane. We already have a road named Wildflower, so
Wildflower.
Maybe slowing down speeds is where there are going to be crosswalks. This corner right here, that's not really corner, but this point right here is kind of a point of concern for myself and the engineer and fire department. I sent out the requirements for turn radius on the fire.
I keep sending.
I
think it looks like it's starting back up, but
what we do
I have
there,
no idea
what's
going on.
Just
like
I mentioned, that's a good point to bring up. We've made sure our turn radius is around certain around the street so y'all have visibility. We'll send you a draft on that. Then on this road, because they like fire truck likes to get down about 150 feet, and they got to be able to take the hose and drip right on 150 foot circle. We meet that, but in addition, what we do at the end of that lane, there's going to be underneath the W blocks, underneath it, grid blocks with grass. So literally, a fire truck will be able to go right off the end.
Okay, that's good. My concern there was I was going to ask for there's a structural fill material that you can put there, but you guys are going to block it.
It looks really nice.
And then the possibility we'd like to require some collapsible bollards there. to keep people from driving over it.
That's a great idea.
Fire truck. There will obviously have to be a grade contest.
That's a great idea.
And then I guess my one question for your engineer on that profile is that from this point, this road dead ends here. Right. There's a couple of trees that obviously we can't tree there. But from this point, the end of this road to the edge of this road, there's a pretty steep drop. We may need to address the slope there. It's about 15%.
Okay.
So if you've got a sidewalk there, it may not even meet ADA requirements. But we want to address that.
Well, while we're talking about the sidewalks, can you talk more about the sidewalk plan? On one side of the street, there were sidewalks proposed, but what was the reasoning behind it? Was it a space constraint? That it wouldn't be on both sides of the road?
Oh, I see. Usually in these little planned communities, we do this quite a bit, actually. We find that most people, when they do walks, they actually walk in the streets. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, the sidewalks are something that people don't use. And probably the majority of this community here will be people over 50 years of age.
Now, is that going to be part of the marketing? And that's not part of the development?
It's just part of the price point. But okay. I can say that what we've experienced in these type of communities is that majority of them will be over 50
years. So my experience with developments like this is rotation down here, across from the Ryan Flash, and they have sidewalks on both sides. You know, it's gonna be good. Is this going to be similar kind of setup as that?
I haven't seen that.
Okay.
On the project. This makes for a really nice. We have sidewalks that meander through both parks, connecting, and it really gives it a nice feel. The way that we have it here.
So it's just the interior loops. You're going to have the sidewalks, right?
That's correct. Plus we have sidewalks and a walkway that goes through both of them, connecting both of the parks. You don't see that.
It's hard to see that.
Right?
I was just going to get one.
There's
two just right here.
Yeah.
These are the two parks.
Say there's these kind of grayed out areas surrounding the internal.
Yeah,
right. The internal two blocks. Those are the sidewalks.
These walkways come through here, right here. And then I remember from way back, the mayor now, Jennings, she wanted connectivity through here, so we made sure there was a sidewalk along here to connect to that road. And then we increased all the size of the lots here, and we have mandated evergreen type trees that go along here to buffer these homes along here. So.
And the setbacks from the other homes that are already existing, it's the 20-foot rear setback. Is that?
No, it's 10.
It's 10.
We have a minimum of 10, but that's just to make it standard throughout the whole thing. These lots here are larger lots that butt up against these homes along here.
Jenny, what's the rear setback from our 1,000?
I believe it's 25, but I don't. I'm not sure.
And that's for these homes, the existing homes to the south of it, this development.
I have a video moving. Next time we come up, this was just a rezone, so we didn't really come plan to kind of show you what this community looks like. But a real similar community is, we have a video that we'll bring next time. It's similar in looks and feel to. I don't know if you've been to 13th West, there's a South York Temple there. Right across the street there, there's a little community there.
I think I've been up there.
So you can have a few.
And then my other question was about the buffer on this commercial parcel that's on the corner. Is that going to be allowable up to two stories like the rest of the commercial zone?
This portion right here?
The top
well.
This one, yeah, the same provisions.
And is there any buffer between those houses and that commercial?
There will be a fence. Mm-hmm. There will be a concrete fence will run just west of this lot right here, and then behind these lots right here. Okay. Something else, in our meeting with the fire chief, given the proximity of the homes to the road and the narrowness of the road, if it forbid that one of these homes catches on fire, and I'm fire truck has to pull up. Due to the height and the distance from the road, the fire truck would be in the collapse zone. So one way that we can possibly remedy that is by, right now you're showing a few fire hydrants. We've got one about right here, one on this side. It would be to add a couple more options on fire hydrants, just to be able to, if it was a fire, they could attach to a fire hydrant here, and then fight the fire down here rather than having to pull the structure.
Just have your engineer mark it where you want it next to.
Any of these connections, just pass it to your engineer and then shoot it.
On the other PI laterals, first thing to say, right now you guys are showing a proprietary ladder to each lateral to each lot. What we like to see, we like this, is run a lateral in between two lots and then at the lot property line, tee it, put a meter on either side of that, so that you can see running half the laterals. But then it also decreases the number of laterals that have to
when we do a single meter for the secondary irrigation, is what we do rather than individual meters. So, you know, that's what you do for the culinary. Then on the secondary irrigation, we do a single meter and we run laterals in each of the units rather than have an individual meter.
See, I thought that some of them had individual meters for each one.
Is that what it is?
I think so. Okay. I think so. We can make that language. Okay. Let's talk about this retention basin right here. This retention basin is where the storm water for this subdivision will be collected. This is on the city's 9 acres, and we've gone back and forth with the engineers on this. Originally, it was proposed to be about 0.58 acres, and as many of you know, the city is in talks of selling our commercial land. It's just kitty corner to this property. We felt that 0.5 acres may encroach too much on that development. So we asked them to try to cut it down to a quarter acre. When we did, the design came back and we didn't want to hit in the middle of the commercial zone. So we've asked them to go back to keep it at 0.5 acres and to keep all the grading outside of the future road right of way, and to not have any slope easements on any side, to keep it within that 0.5 acres. And this was one of these questions was, this settlement agreement specifically calls out that the basin will be rock. I had a conversation with Ryan from Project Utah yesterday about the possibility of having that be grass. To determine the two price points and if there's a difference there, say you have the city front that so that there could be grass there. What we're trying to do there, just so everyone's aware, is we want to keep this as open space because it's going to count as open space for a development to the south. And so we want to be able to have something that in the future we can do something with. If it's a pit, we can't do a whole lot with it, but if it's 0.5 acres and it's grass, you can at least play soccer in it, or you can do something with it. So we're in discussion with that, so that's to be determined.
Question about that.
Sure.
So the retention area that right now is to the east on the corner where it would be like plot being up 7.
This portion right
here? Yeah, so that's, you're not going to have that
big retention. No, that's going to be abandoned. It's all going to be directed to this
point. Right, okay.
So this subdivision has to capture the drainage that this one has plus all the everything within that. Plus, make sure that in your drainage calculations you're taking center line of road on your property. Sorry, those are calculations.
That's on both sides, yes. 4,600 as well as 4,700.
This is already, so this one I believe 4,600 drained into here.
Yeah, it's already.
So, yeah, this capacity on here and then on 4,700 will have to all be drained and contained in this new retention.
So, in that new retention area, it's part of the 30%.
Yeah. We're going to talk to them. We met with them, and they're willing to maybe look at that and beautify it, make it look nicer. So we're going to try to bridge those gaps. try to get some work between the two developers. On your road profiles, there's a number of grade breaks that need to be addressed. We just want to curve it. Where there's a grade break of greater than 0.5%, we need a vertical curve. And I think there's a grade break on each one as well, so we can clean that up. And then I think the last thing I have is the termination point of this road, 4700. It drops off significantly from the edge of road down. It drops off about 4 feet. When we get to this point, in order to allow for the developer of the south to tie in, we need to have that at grade. So I don't know what that does for your stormwater plan, but it presents some problems for future tie-ins when it's that much higher.
I was curious if you could talk to the parts about improving that half of that.
I can.
Maybe you will have a conversation.
I can tell you what, I will go down
there. And I've talked to Mark. I'm happy to go to parts anytime.
go down to parts tomorrow and I'll try to get in touch with their owner and talk to begin that conversation. Oh, we'll get back to that.
The only two accesses are the one here, the one on 4600 and the one on Cedar Hills Drive that ties into the commercial area, right?
Correct.
And what's the traffic impact going to be? Do we have, are we that far along yet? Have the traffic study?
On the 80 lots?
Yeah.
We would just go off of what the 80T is adopted for any traffic impact. Just assume the same treatment as any other residential development. But to give you maybe some perspective, Cedar West over here, High, or the Wagon West, or a number of different things, it has, correction, how many neighbors do you have?
300 and something.
300 and something, and it has two accesses.
And we have private narrow roads as well.
I think that's it for me.
At this point, I would like to open up for the public hearing on this. This is Tommy, you've been very patient.
So, could I talk first, because I have to leave, Mr. Grish? I'll be very brief.
Are you okay with that?
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate the courtesy. I have to run first here on behalf of the developer, and I will be brief. I will just point out to you that this is a preliminary, and as you know, in your city, you get to see this twice. Not every city gets to see it twice. We made it so that you don't have to see it twice either. But the nice part is, this is the part of the meeting where I get to stand up and I get to say, we are willing to do engineering details that meet your staff's requirement. Whatever it may reasonably be to comply with the state law, or building codes, or fire codes, if it's an extra fire hydrant, we're going to put an extra fire hydrant. If it's a reduced speed limit, we're going to put a reduced speed limit. If it's a raised sidewalk, we're going to put a raised sidewalk. The nice part about the buffer, for example, between the commercial and the residential is this is a planned community, so anybody who will be buying into that residential will know that there's going to be a commercial site next to it. And if we need to put some extra landscaping between there, we'll do that. We'll fix all of the details as usually happens. Chandler's done a great job of going through the red lines, which you don't normally see. That's kind of behind the scenes work. But he brought them up here, and that's fine. And the reason it's fine with us is because we intend to fix all of those and deal with all of those between now and when you see the final plat. So all you're doing today with this plat is giving us the right to stay on our clock and move forward to the next stage. We will fix any of the legitimate issues between now and the next stage. And Corey will deal with those if he has to. And now I'm going to go put my Kevlar vest on and go to Draper because they're not going to be as nice as you.
We do have some room for leniency here, but we do need to be expeditious. So let's jump right at it.
I did received a couple of answers to some questions. Thank you, Mr. Thomas, for bringing up the sidewalk issue. As I said in my letter, I don't think there's not a federally developed communities, and there are safety issues with having streets that are not built to city standards, especially because you would. And that was included in my letters, that there is going to be congestion on these streets, and there's going to be a safety issue involved because the project is geared toward 55 and plus. And that usually means people will want to get to their homes, and they will want to be safe in their homes. They're not going to be the only ones living here. Sometimes adult children come to live with their parents, and they're going to be bringing children, they're going to be playing in the streets. And there's going to be delivery trucks coming, a garbage day. A street that is not able to meet the city standards is going to be difficult and dangerous to the community. So I'm glad to hear that there can be some tweaking done. And I'm told that the width of the city street, the width of the private street, could be built to city standards for the safety of residents. And thank you, Chairman, for bringing up the retention basin. I think that will be a great addition of half a year to open space efficiency, because Cedar City does have a shortage of parking. And that brings me to one of my questions that I had in the letter. I heard that there's 14,000 feet of open space to be provided, but I'm not coming up with a calculation. I'm wondering if the developer could distinguish between whether there's hardscape open space, roadways, sidewalks, asphalt, versus soft greenscape as far as soil and plants. Perhaps that question could be answered easily.
This is not the time for that.
We're running out of time, so we'll move on to the open space issue of the ratio that the city has already established as a standard. According to the general plan, they recommend, and they try to shoot for as a goal, to have 5.5 to 6 acres of open space per 1,000 residents. And if you come to a calculation, 16% of 1% of 1,000 would be 16% of 5.5 acres. Then we bring up 0.8 of an acre to be provided as open space, or 34,000 square feet needed for a park in this community. And I'm not seeing, I'm only seeing that the Cedar Canyon is only allocating two upper meadow sized lots for parkland, and that would only total 6,500 square feet. So to make it livable, I think there should be at least three more lots allocated for open space. The parkland that could be established would bring an amenity to this development. It would bring an economic return of the developer's investment. Because if they want to sell the houses there, they've got to be competitive. And to create a demand for a neighborhood with a high quality of life facility, like more open space, more green scheme, now is the time to put it on the plans.
I'll need you to hurry up and finish.
And the sidewalk issue, as I said, is very important. Is there going to be a professional urban planner that will peer review this plan? And if not, why? Again, I commend the city and Cedar Canyon for coming to this agreement. And I hope these tweaks can bring it into more of a high quality development. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we do not have anyone else signed up, but this will be an opportunity if anyone else would like to be heard.
Have a comment.
If you have a comment, we'll leave you there. Sorry. Start with name and address, then.
Jean Peasley, 101479 Brown West. Okay. Concerning the streets and sidewalks, I think when we read it, if we don't have sidewalks on both sides, my daughter just bought a house in West Jordan, and the streets are so narrow that cars parking on the sidewalk, in order to have one lane for cars. cars to travel. And this, and the houses on the straight road are only 5 to 6 feet apart. I don't even think they're 6 feet, they're about 5 feet apart. And then when you get to the cul-de-sac, the curve, then my daughter's property line on the north is her house and driveway. On the south side is her neighbor's. And that's really, I would hate to be in there if there was a fire. The houses are just too close.
Okay. Deliberations.
I just want to mention, although we don't have any attached housing other than town, this happens all the time. Townhomes are built attached, housing is built. Those are not insurmountable challenges from an engineering standpoint. It's an aesthetic preference, I guess, for a lot of people, but I think from an engineering standpoint, that's not going to be an insurmountable problem.
I didn't think any of these were attached, though.
They're not. But I'm saying that you know, these types of issues with homes being close together, and
right.
Like that happens all the time. Yeah.
I think you're seeing anybody that pays attention to the housing market in Utah is a shortage. It's definitely a silicon market. And kind of the way that cities are encouraged by a state to do their planning is changing. It really is. Cities are looking more and more at high-density housing. When I say high-density housing, this is low-density housing. So I think that there's kind of been a real shift in how people and what people are looking for as far as living arrangements. So this I think is a nice range for single family units with private land. This stays away from some of the other stuff you might see, that you will see in certain areas of Pleasant Grove. You'll see a lot of bigger buildings, like 3 or 4 stories at the point up. In Vineyard, you see a lot of the higher density housing. So this stays with kind of the Cedar Hills traditional model of single family housing in a time when kind of trends the opposite way.
I was just reading that I think Cowboy Properties up in Salt Lake is building our first high-rise residential in Salt Lake. So again, the trend is going that direction, that we can put very high-density housing in. And so to be able to preserve the single-family aspect of this, I think is pretty important.
I think it is. Address some of the issues Tommy brought up in mind. On the width of the streets, they are called out in some. And we have other communities in Cedar Hills that have this type of arrangement where the widths of the streets are actually smaller than the city standard. And that's due to cost freedom. Yes, Cedar's West is a good example. I think Kalani is also on the Bakers. And the city does not enforce parking in those areas. Communities that have HOA or CCRs, they enforce that.
To that, I did not make it true with all the CCRs as proposed for this project. Are there going to be limitations on street parking in the CCRs?
Not that I've seen. That is something we can talk about, though. I'm happy to take that conversation and have it with our city.
Just strictly from a safety point of view, I think might be something.
Because there's really not, I don't believe that there's anything we can do about the width of the streets, but the enforcement streets are how that operates these days in conversation.
Well, and to that point, let's say there were cars parked on the street and an emergency vehicle needed to get through, and there just wasn't space because cars were parked on the street.
The streets are designed for parking on one side.
One side, yes. Okay.
One side.
How do you enforce it?
You report with the HOA. So if there's a problem, with somebody parking there.
Is there signage?
They can only signage on
signage and a it's a tall area. So.
I believe the city also, as part of the agreement, the city can be called upon to help enforce the park cleaning. Yes, no?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
We've really steered away from enforcing helping enforce the HOAs.
All these units have full driveways, so there's four parking spots per unit.
Two inside and two in the driveway.
Yeah, so I mean, it's, we try to park that.
No,
and then we have some other
parking. They still park on the road.
Oh, yeah.
I missed that last part. What was the last part you said?
Because they fill their roads.
Then we have some other parking areas here. Right. Like in front of the parks and things.
That's what I was looking for.
What's that? What's your point of last night? You didn't even bring it.
See how there's a notch in front of those parks?
This part right here?
No. Well, right, as you come in the
entrance. Oh, it's right here.
Right there. Yeah. And then we have gating boxes for the mailboxes. So it'll be one structure to handle all the mailboxes. So there won't be individual mailboxes on each of them, which also helps to.
And how many of those boxes, mailboxes, will there be? Like 10 per or 12 per group or something like that?
You know, I haven't seen the sign. But that's good.
The post office has regulations for that. And generally speaking, they'll allow us to do one or two. They don't allow us to break them up into 10s and 12s.
Okay. I think we have 12 on our
street. I wanted to address the concern of open space. In the city, we have all kinds of open space in the city. And it may not always be what you think of as open space, but very traditional open space and very non-traditional open space. So obviously, if you were to go through the city and take a drive, you have the new Bayfield Park, you have Mesquite Soccer Park, you have Heritage Park, you have Sunset Park, you have Texas Hollow Park here, you have Tenth Cove Park here, you have the new Harvey Park for development of 12 acres. So you've got a lot of major parks in the city, the three biggest being Mesquite, Heritage by Tim Cove with Harvey, which is going to be the biggest park in the city. That's your traditional open space. On top of that, you have a trail system that runs through the city and adjacent to the city, not only the Murdoch Hill Trail, which we're partners with, but you also have the Forest Creek Trail, which runs through the city. You have the trail that's actually Highlands that runs through here and runs through the golf course, and then the Bonneville Shoreline Trail that runs up along here. And then you have some non-traditional open space, which the golf course is actually open space. It's the open space, you smirk, but it's the open space. It's the open space for the Cedars development, as well as the city owns all this property, which is dedicated open space. If I scroll down here, you'd see a lot of property down here that's open space, as well as a future park down here. So the city has quite a bit of open space for a city our size. It's just not all in terms of traditional park.
Can I bring up the new township plot? How much of that 30% is the retention plot? 6% against you want.
Well, it's a half an acre, and that piece is just under 9, so whatever half an acre on my end is.
All right. I was just
kind of, it's over 10%. It's not the older.
Okay. I was just a little more disappointed in that because that I thought maybe the developer was going to put different open space. It would have to be smaller because
this retention plan was under development. And so I'm just wondering how that affects the plan. That's a fair question. Because as you recall, the previous plan for this development to the south had this 4700 road coming down, and then on the east side of that road, and basically in this area here, there would be an indoor climbing pool storage building, and then there would be an athletic facility. And then between those was a half acre.
Can you save your money?
Basically, what's going to happen now is I'm anticipating, I haven't seen a plan yet, so but that half acre park is being pulled out and put right here. And it's the, what was once a traditional park is now going to be a retention basin. But the way that we're redesigning this is to try to allow for future accommodations. So if the city really wanted to, at some point they could do the storage, hold the storm drain underground, and then build a park on top. That's not possible. So there aren't options. But if it's a quarter acre, it really reduces our options on top. So what we're trying to do with this is to keep our options open and to go and work with them to move away from the rock and go to the grass. And they've been open to that conversation.
The vegetation requirements are similar to like the types of trees and landscaping are similar to the commercial requirements, or not at all. I mean, maybe we're not that far down the road yet, but.
No, I have not gone down into that level of detail. Commercial on what trees they're planting. All the way. I think that there's probably room to have a discussion on having some.
It's going to be part of the design requirements, so the types of vegetation.
I'll make a note of that. I haven't had time to get down to that.
And then, there's shown on the plan on the last, you know, page here. There's not going to be a vegetated barrier between the existing homes on the south side and the new proposed homes, right?
It's just
going.
On the preliminary plan, it doesn't show. Doug, I think you mentioned that you're going to be putting trees along the south border.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
will there be a privacy fence too, or just
yeah, yes. Yes.
Okay.
I don't know if the gradients would be there, but we're real sensitive to that area there, and we'll take a look at the gradient. I'll need to look at that, but the fence will be going in, and also evergreen trees.
I will entertain a motion.
Yes, go. Sorry, Ken. One more thing. I met with David Briggs, the chair, who was not able to be here tonight. I met with him yesterday about his concern. And his concern was the way that this property would look is you're driving around on Cedar Hill Drive and coming down 4600 or vice versa. What would this property look like? Right now, what you'd see is you'd see a small landscaping buffer between the street and the fence. Then you'd see a vinyl fence, and you'd see what would be the backs of homes over the fence, right? That's what his concern was. His thought was two parts. One is, could you require the design guidelines to have an architectural element above the fence line, and two, on the fence, so that you don't see just a solid line of fence. Those are concerns. Well, I can hear that because I didn't meet you yesterday.
Okay, I
have
something else.
That's going to be
on the back of
Fourth
Street. Across the street,
Cedar
Ridge.
So, I do have a question about that. So, with there being a landscaping buffer and the fence, those private lots on the other side of the fence are not going to maintain that strip. Is that city maintained?
That's city maintained strip, yeah.
Okay.
Is that strip going to be wide enough to put trees?
Yeah.
My understanding is it's fairly narrow.
No, there'll be
It'll be a city park strip.
And what is that setback from the street? Yeah, and there's already sidewalk there.
Not on the North Center.
Not on that side. Will there be sidewalk?
Yes, there will. Yes. So you see that green line on the very right side?
I do.
Runs much farther. This right here, this is a new sidewalk. So there will be, they're identifying trees to be planted between curb there and sidewalks on the park strip there.
You know, what I think would look nice is, because this is all going to be, this will look like a stone fence. It'll go around here like this and there. What I think would look nice is about every third or fourth is you'd put a stone column in. And that'll break up that, just this, you know, this is really going to look nice here anyway because you already have those large trees there. But this landscaping here is really going to look nice. But I think if we go about every third or fourth house, put a stone column that ties to that along this street and along this street, I think.
And these are going to be like, masonry type fence.
Yeah. They're like, yeah. It'll look like stone.
Columns will be stone.
They're concrete.
The fence will be vinyl, but the.
Right.
Okay.
And then we go a tan fence, so it's not a stark fence. Mm-hmm. A little more expensive, but it'll blend in. What you'll really see is the landscape.
And then that's what, 15, 20 fence probably?
All of that. And then it'll be maintained by the HOA.
Yeah. The settlement agreement does call out that. The settlement agreement does call out that the fence is only maintained by the HOA.
Can we go home? I haven't had dinner yet. I'm dying.
Hey, at least you get to go home. We're still on item one.
I'll try again. I'll entertain a motion.
Give me a second. Okay. I move that we recommend to the City Council the conceptual and preliminary plan as presented by staff to be located on approximately 12 acres at 4600 West Cedar Hills Drive, and as part of the settlement agreement between Cedar Hills Farmland LLC and the city, subject to any changes that go into action.
The adoption of the Red Line Engineering Reviews.
The adoption of the Red Line Engineering. Next.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you.
One item done.
Thank you. Thank you for the candy
bar. Yes, we're fine.
Yeah, that was going there. All right. Now we're going to do, hopefully this is very brief, approval of the minutes from February 27th and March 27th Planning Commission meetings. Does anyone on the commission have comments?
They were thorough.
I had two extremely minor changes on the February 27th. Page 5, it's the first one with Commissioner Spears. It's listed as a detention basin. I believe this to be a retention basin. Although with the views, it would be an area that might be appropriate. And then on page 7, just a personal note, my comment there, I work near a storage facility, not at a storage facility. That's all I have. Jerry, Steve? I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make comments. Somebody else there.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Next, 7A, review recommendation on the city code regarding rezoning a portion of the public facility zone. The Oak Grove discussion.
All right.
Chandler.
I believe all of you were on the planning commission when we did this. Be honest. So, let me give you a brief reminder of the history of this zone. I'll give you kind of an understanding of what's going on today. The zone was developed under the planning department of the county in 1976, and this parcel, as well as an adjacent parcel that kind of continues on at the bottom right corner of that image on the screen, were both identified on the original plats as open space for the development. But due to the fact that the city was not incorporated in 1976, as we're going to the following year, there was no municipal body to turn over the open space to for anyway, so it's remained in private hands from that time, and it's exchanged ownership. This one has two or three times, not too many, not too much. But nonetheless, as long as it remains in private hands, applicants are able to make any application for the city for any sort of reason that they wish. In this case, we have an individual, Mr. Rance Jones, who wishes to purchase the property and place a single family lot on the property as identified on the plat here. So you see that square on that far left side of the zone there, that is the identified location where he wishes to go home. And then you can kind of see some other lines of the property. His plan, I understand, is to dedicate that property over to the adjacent owners. And I told Mr. Jones that he was in attendance. I was going to give him a minute to kind of just tell you a little bit about what the plans to do.
$50,000 or $60,000 of improvement.
My background is as an appraiser, as a developer.
amazed at the volume of protection people had to go to what they think to protect their rocks. But the encroachment on there is extensive. And not at every location. My proposal is for the contiguous people around there to offer them the property that's contiguous to their property to expand their lot, but to eliminate the open space, but to extend their property so some of their development is protected. And some of these people have a lot of history with the city. Some of them have been on the planning commission surrounding, some of them have been on the city council. And yet still, they have found some way to edge into the open space. And so it's really no longer open space. It's semi-developed. It's just not their property, and they've done that. And so my proposal, if it's rezoned, I think part of the approach should be, I'll donate that. Now, it will eliminate 1.6 nine acres of open land in the city, and it will create a development, a one-side development housing lot out on Oak Grove. But to protect the people from liability and encumbrances and difficulty that time is allowed, and it's been allowed to happen by everybody in the area. And when somebody, usually if we were to come and develop on your property, and I were to encroach on your property 30 foot or 50 foot with my fence, I would expect an immediate letter and an immediate need for me to remove or have damages. But these people have done that with trying to protect their property from what's going on there. It's been unmaintained all the way. And so they've tried to maintain it to the best of their ability. That's my
point. Let me ask you a question. Do you own the property? Do you have title to the
contract to purchase?
Contingent on what?
The approval of the rezone for residential.
I think this is a good point to break for the public hearing on this.
Can I point out one thing?
Yes.
Just as a matter of note, the action that's being requested tonight is not an approval for the building lot. This is just an answer. You're not approving the building lot. What you're asking is, what is being requested of the Planning Commission tonight is to make a recommendation to the City Council that this land be rezoned from the public facility zone to the R111,000 zone, and that the open space provision on the plat map be vacated, which would then trigger landowner the ability to go through the subdivision process, at which point he would come back with a conceptual preliminary plan, much like what we saw previously, just not 80 lots, but it would allow those, you would have to follow that procedure as well. So you're not being asked to approve a buildable lot right now. Just want to clarify
that. Let me ask one question for both of you. However, it was zoned in R111,000 and vacated the open space division. There's certainly enough space in that corner to create a lot.
Yes.
I understand
half an acre
that clearly exceed the square footage. Go ahead.
We had this question of the investment of development rights before when there were none. And we pretty much said no before, didn't we?
Yeah. The question that was proposed was, if there is not a rezoning here, does it constitute taking, basically? Are you taking a land use, a property use, away from a developer by not, or from a landowner by not rezoning this? My opinion of it is no, you are not. This is not considered a taking because this land has been identified as open space for over 40 years. So any person that purchased the property from them has changed hands a number of times, purchased it with it being open space. Regardless of what zone it was, it's always been open space.
I mean, there's a windfall profit that happens to whoever sells it because of the major increase in value here. Like, we've talked about that before too.
Yeah, there's been discussion, why doesn't the city purchase this? Well, we're not going to purchase this land at a single family home rate. If we're going to purchase it, we're willing to purchase it if it's at the public facility rate, you know, the open space rate, which it's never been for sale that rate. So there's never been any discussions. I had some discussions and it kind of just, it's like shopping for a Ferrari with a budget of a Kia.
But until now, it doesn't have the value of a single family developable space because it's not one, right?
If I understand your question correct, it's...
I mean, it's not been, you know, R111,000 before, has it?
It has, but it was still open space at that time. So even then, the landowner would have to come to the planning commission or to the city council and say, please vacate the open space provision on this plat so that I can then develop my property.
Right.
Yes. So what's being asked tonight again is to rezone and vacate the open space, which triggers, which based on the council decision, add that caveat, based on that would trigger the development process. So that's all I want to know.
Thanks. I do not have a list of people signed up for this issue, but I'm pulling it from. Chairman, could you clarify something for me?
Yeah.
So, was there a request last summer to change the zoning to R1000, or was it to change the public facility?
Well, the request last summer was to change it to R1000.
But that was for weed abatement, not for development.
The planning commission, so here, let me, that's something interesting where we got to here. The planning commission made a recommendation to this council to rezone it to R111,000 based on the weed abatement ordinances. Between that time at city council, the application was pulled.
Different seller.
Yeah, same owner, but now somewhere in the environment. And I think Mr. Jones has come in with a plan showing exactly what he intends to do as an individual, just said, I'd like to develop them.
Right.
And that could be whatever they purchase and imagines.
Okay, the first name out on the list is Greg Holbrook. I remind you, please state your name, address, and you'll have 3 minutes.
My name is Greg Holbrook. My address is 10217 North Old Court. I'm the home that the proposed home will be directly behind my home. I would lose the open space that's behind my home. And I'm the one probably one of the most directly impacted by losing that open space and having the home directly in the backyard. Not long ago this last fall, I asked everyone to stand, but I'm standing here who's against us as local citizens, because this designation has always been against us. And since, you know, I'm one of the original residents, I moved in 1984. We have members who have been part of the city council to explain how this has always been the open space. Since we had all those individuals come this last fall, we didn't feel it necessary to go testimony after testimony like we did this last fall and burden stacking, you know, the group here. But we met 2 weeks ago. We looked at this proposal. And we came to a unified conclusion that nothing has changed, in our opinion, with this proposal, because it has always been our intent that, you know, this would not be buildable. This is always, even though it's changed names, it's always been open space. And we'd like to go on record, as we met 2 weeks ago and talked about, you know, the losing of the open space with this home that is coming in, it has always been open space. We think it should remain as open space. Something is taken away from us as local citizens if this, you know, development is allowed on this space. It's never been there. We've been able to enjoy this space. We would, our home, we lose this space. And nothing is taken away from the owners, because from when they bought the space, they've always known that it was purchased
at a designation for, and that was designated as open space, purely speculation, so that someday they can make a windfall profit to the detriment of what we believe as local citizens, as neighbors. And so we respectfully ask that the Planning Commission recommend to the city that this open space be approved.
Sorry, I'm going to make you go through it again for the record.
My name is Sherry Clundy at 4221 West O'Connor. Commissioners, thanks again for the opportunity to address you regarding open space being rezoned to residential. I hope you've had a chance to review what happened last year personally. I found that listening to the audio of your August 31st meeting was really helpful in getting a feel for how important this hillside parcel is to the neighborhood here. I'd like to list a few issues that I think should be put in the record again. As Chandler said, the parcel was set aside at its initial planning was open. Mr. Parsons acquired the property for that indication on it. As Greg said, the surrounding landowners bought their property with the understanding that it is open space. Cedar Hills is below its recreational standards, so we should be adding to parkland, not chiseling away at it. And remember, the Harvey parcel is already calculated in this ratio, so please don't think that we're there to stand in check. And regarding the golf course, I don't consider that a open space, because if you're not a golfer, you as a walker are now banned from being on the golf course. The means of issue surveys show a high desire for parks along trail routes in each area of town. Our capital improvement schedule lists this area as the Oak Grove Parkland, scheduled for acquisition in the year 2025. City Code Title 10, Chapter 1, Paragraph 2C states that city leaders are called on to promote the general welfare of our inhabitants by lessening congestion in the streets, preventing the overcrowding of land, and providing adequate light and air. The weed ordinance has been updated to take care of the neighbors' concerns about fire hazard. And finally, I'd like to present this petition to you again from last year with 150 signatures that oppose the rezoning. Because of these facts, I respectfully ask you to deny the petition's request for any and all residential use of the land. The area he is interested in for a house is just as valuable to me as city parkland, and I'm not interested in accepting his generous offer of land. The best use of his street side parcel is not more density, and I ask you to control density on my street. It's in the city's interest to keep all of the land for recreational purposes. I ask you to abide by the original intent of the subdivision plat and to follow the city's general plan for the whole park on Oak Road. These documents are meant to help you with your planning duties and to avoid arbitrary governmental choices. Use them carefully to consider how you feel about open space, where it is needed, and what it takes to protect it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Jean Peasley.
Good.
All right, James Priest.
My name is Dave Free. I live at 4309 West Oak Road North in Cedar Hills. I live just to the north across the street from this parcel. And so at this point, we've lived in Cedar Hills for 20 years. And the encroachment to me would be his house in my view. And so I live in a view lot. And right now, if the lanes build on their lot, which is adjacent to it, I would still have a view. Now, if he builds where he's at, which is green space or open space right now, it will obstruct my view. And when people buy back at the golf course, they buy for that view. I bought my house with a view of the lake and of the temple and stuff, which will be obstructed if the house is built there. So it does affect me personally, it affects me financially. I've not encroached on his property, but his property would, if it allowed to be changed, would encroach upon my view. And so I would ask that the city move forward, so we don't do this every 6 months. And somehow, if the city, if it's in the 2025 plan to make this as a green space, a walking path or whatever, I would ask that the city do what is necessary to purchase the land so we can keep coming back. You guys have more important things to do. I think us as citizens, don't need to be here every 6 months rehashing the same exact thing that we spent a lot of time on 6 months ago. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all I had on the list. If anybody else would like to speak to this issue, this is your chance.
Chandler?
Yeah, please, sure. Just.
Any questions?
I do have a question. Like any other parcel in the city that's privately held, anybody in the position of its only change. So, short of the city owning the land, those petitions can come in eventually. There's no stopping.
Okay. No, and I believe that's protected in people's individual private property rights. And the city itself has at least zoning land use authority rights that are given to it apparently by the state, the Tuscan Constitution, where they can make, they could be the arbiter of all zoning laws in boundaries of their municipality. So this is something. Bruce Baird kind of alluded to it before, like you are the arbiters of the zoning here. Whatever you want, whatever you want. You guys get to play out the vision and recommend that to the city council.
Okay. I have a couple thoughts. I have one house that's condensed my entire neighborhood. But I do have a feeling that some change this is reasonable. The government that you have changed our model. But this is a communal space, not as somebody else's side yard or this. I mean, I haven't seen this. Have any of you ever seen this?
The reason they have done that is require protection. When they moved here in 1984, that was on fire several times a year. People have their homes connected all the time so they could run out, put out the fire. And usually after the time the fire department got there, but they made sure that it was clear. And if they put a fence on that property, then that is
That was the next question I was going to ask. Chandler, if you have mentioned, are there any fences?
I don't know any structures. I don't believe there's any structures. I've never seen any structures. I've walked through there.
I've only seen along the top and seen the side.
I've parked over here.
Yes.
And I've walked through there, and it gets pretty dicey. In nice clothes, it's tough walk. But I've never seen a structure. I've seen some embayments, landscaping. It's not a structure. I don't recall seeing any fences either.
A fence would be a clear violation. A fence would have
there, though. Yeah.
I can move that. Tyler Gardner, 10218 North Oak Court. So I live in this home. My father owned this home, bought it.
Did you guys move in?
He bought it in 83. I mean, we didn't get it in 84. So 83. I bought this house from my dad 2 years ago. And we do have a fence. So the dotted line, that fence is up there. And that fence was put in maybe over 30 years ago with the knowledge of Parsons. It's on, you can go back to, there was a city council meeting in 1994. Where Parsons was in attendance and they talked about the fence. And so he has had knowledge. According to my dad, when he did put up the fence, Parsons was aware that the fence went up. Since at that time, there was no plan, there was nothing going on with that space. Because if you look at the back of my yard, it's just a straight up hill.
Right.
So they did cut up a little bit back into it for maintaining the property and to prevent fire and everything, droppage. So yes, we do have a fence, and as Mr. Jones talked about, it has encroached a little bit into the property, but that has been over 30 years of the fence that's been hanging. So it's not a recent scene, and it has been visible to anyone and the property owner. So.
Can you put where that fence is?
Yeah, can you just go right on that? It's the dotted line right here. And this isn't to scale at all, but it is from here, kind of up into
so
this.
So it closes that whole space.
What was that?
It does enclose that whole area?
Yes. So it is fenced from here, goes up, and it's just my whole back. Yeah, my whole backyard is fenced.
So it's about half that space.
This, like I said, it's not. This is not to scale. But as I said, at about this point, you're looking at a straight uphill from that point.
So is that the parcel of Mr. Jones is proposing
as a track? This is right here.
Well, he'd get the whole thing if he purchased it, and then yeah. Deed. Because it all comes as one part.
Tyler's improvements are minor compared to some of the others. Tyler's improvements, the biggest improvement that I saw as an appraiser is two doors down. And the biggest, I would have to estimate the value of those.
Two doors in this direction.
Yes.
Which one are you talking about?
It's Melissa and
right here?
Yes.
I believe actually you're talking about this.
Improvements are a park-like improvement with rock and landscaping. It's beautiful. That's they've changed the topography of the ground by the development. This process has happened. Like you say, they're trying to protect the fire. I mean, there's lots of reasons about that. But they still are going beyond their boundaries. And it's a history of a problem. And some of the complaints that they had is a lot of the people that try to go in there and try to overdevelop the property so that it's not reasonable land. It's wrong. The access is poor. In fact, I'm saying extremely marginal. So as they try to protect their property, I understand why they did it. It's just they did it beyond their property line incorrectly.
Can you overlay the lot line on that channel?
The lot line is there. It's a bit hard to see. Yes, if I'm, let me just use the cursor. Can you see my cursor? So this is the lot line right here. And then right here is where the parcel, that Utah County identifies the parcel line. And then from this juncture here, right there. So it's on this area, you can see some, you see there's some improvements through here that have been made. Then, like there's some, when I walked back there, I saw a number of grow boxes, but I didn't walk back there with GPS and
right.
What I was wearing. I was there kind of more get a feel for what the slopes were like during the previous proposal.
Yeah.
But you do see like the property line here and there. So there's some grow boxes back here, and people have taken their lawns and extended them a little bit further into that land. But I understand that this lot has not been, the weed abatement on this lot has not been happening.
Yeah.
So I understand some of that rationale. However, it is a private property.
So where is the proposed footprint?
The building footprint?
Yeah.
Be right here.
So I thought.
So then the lot, I believe, would kind of come out. There's a...
And that other parcel that's to the east of that is developable already, right?
This one up in the corner here, this gentleman Ray Lane owns it, so he owns both these parcels. This is a buildable lot. He could come in and put a home there at some point. Mr. Jones would like to see this portion be a buildable lot. So that's ultimately what.
And then the rest of that would then be split among the neighbors.
Correct.
Yes.
What I'm proposing to do is develop that thing, do that property and survey it, and do that split out by what's called meets and bounds. And not even before it doesn't go in front of the development. People have already encumbered it. I'm just going to go in and identify it with their cooperation, because we can't force you to receive anything from nothing.
So would you enter into a...
So I never actually serve them, because if they don't want it, I can't do it.
So are you proposing a boundary line agreement?
Yeah, I'm proposing that I realize I have the responsibility to go think. Now, I understand the possibility of encumbering a view. In fact, I've gone over that view issue with some of the neighbors. Right. The home that I'm proposing to build is a basement ramp, not a two-story. So a hoop block can be. I mean, to develop this property correctly, it needs to work for everybody, because they put up with this problem for 40 years. And out of survival processes, they can come in with the yard waste and gardens and everything else into the open space. So, is it open space anymore? It's designed as that right now, but functionally, it's property by the surrounding property owners. And that's the way they've used
it. And they haven't done anything if they allow them to deed it to them.
They advise their neighbor that you can't do this. I mean, they have a responsibility to maintain the open space. Do I call open space? Technically, what the city has called that now. But over the time of their years, and over the need to protect their families and their yards, they've encumbered into it. So functionally, it's not open space.
You might know this, Jen, or might know this. Actually, the concern to me is an uncontested fence for more than 7 years. Isn't there a precedent about that?
It's 18 years. It's called order by acquiescence, is the law. So after 18 years with an uncontested fence, you could technically.
It's just curious to me. I mean,
it's a 7 years one. I would have to have been in
I would defer to our attorney before making it.
And there are.
Yes.
There are a number of variables the court would look at for a boundary adjustment like that when you're trying to claim, especially if the county has drawn the lines. You have to have fences, a number of things, you know, kind of normalcy. It's it can frequently be contested.
Thank you. Yeah, actually, I'll move to take it 10 for eight. All in favor? Opposed? 10-minute recess.
Don't let me forget to start this. Stop. Yes.
Jen, did you get my message today?
Not yet.
Thank you, Gretchen. Let's continue our discussion.
Shall we?
Steve, let's start with you. Additional thoughts on that side?
Maybe, let's see. come back.
I will do that. So my thoughts are that there's a lot about property that they're concerned with. I think it doesn't make as a facility as it makes sense as long as it's owned by private individuals. I understand the neighbor's concerns, but there is really no recreational purpose for this property or use. I've been there many times, I've never seen one else there. It's not approved, it's not beautiful, it's some parts are very steep. With all due respect, Dave, your view is not something that's legally protected. So I understand that concern, but that's not something that is ever going to be action. So, should be the basis for this decision. The other issue is that the way the property was obtained by the individual is problematic. You bought it in tax for, I don't know, $5.
So this whole district is very concerning to me. But I think they probably need to vary to this property.
Gloria?
I thought sorry, this is a community space and it's community space and they ought not be used as other purposes by anyone but as primary for one. But I do think there's a risk, you know, if it is bought by somebody and potentially subdivided, there's the risk that it would be subdivided more for someone of the law.
Yeah, so there are a couple of issues here. There's one, this kind of the squatters that are using the property, the fence, which we weren't aware of before. And there's a couple of other, you know, things here too. So yes, there's history. Yes, there's, you know, the open space designation and all of this. But the city's evolved. The city's changed. It's not the turkey farm or the orchards that it was before. It's changing, you know. And as it changes, property values go up. Development looks different. I mean, who ever thought that? What we just did a few minutes ago about all of the single family homes down here would ever come before us, right? Like that wasn't ever on anybody's radar. So we have to, as a planning commission, see things as they come to us and as they are currently, not necessarily as they historically were. I mean, that's why we have the option and, you know, ability to change things. Change. That's why people are in these seats. They don't. If they didn't change, we would do one plan one time and be done with it. So that's kind of the precursor to what I'm going to say next. I don't have any issue with allowing development rights on that corner piece. Now those other lots, those other pieces that are already being used by the neighbors for other things, if we rezone this, all of this, we can't necessarily control the proposals that are going to come in on it.
Sure.
And so we may, instead of getting one lot out of this, make it six lots out of this. And people are, oh, that's not buildable. That's not necessarily true. Because we've seen that in some of the other areas here, you know, you can stabilize just about any ground. I mean, in some places, they make ground in the middle of water to build on. I mean, it happens. So engineering challenges are not insurmountable. So we could, you know, we could see proposals to stick something in the side of this hill. And as long as they can make the geotechnical, you know, stuff work, it could potentially be approved for. So those things, I don't know how to mitigate that or if we even should, but that's definitely a risk here that if we rezone this and vest them with development rights at the same time, that it could change dramatically from what's proposed now to something completely
different. That's a two-step process. I mean, we're not here to approve a concept plan or.
We're not, but I want to make sure that we talk about this.
Sure. That is, it could be an unintended consequence. You're right. With enough wherewithal, money, and engineering, you can do just about anything you want. I've seen some pretty crazy ideas.
And I've seen some pretty crazy developments, even here in Utah. So, it happens.
You tell
it.
I think something I would want to have a discussion with the city attorney on would be the city's ability to limit it to one lot, because I don't know that's a conversation I will have at a later date based on whatever you guys decide to recommend. However, I think one other thing to maybe keep in mind here is Anytime we make a decision on any matter, you do kind of have to consider what are the unintended consequences, what is the precedent for what we're setting. And in this case, last year when we went through this process, I knew that there were three parcels in the city that were currently held in the public facility zone, but they were owned privately. They were not owned by the city. One of those being Harvey Park, which is now owned by the city. So now we're down to two. We're down to the parcel in question tonight, and then parcel adjacent to it, which is similar in nature. It's a PF zone. It's designated open space. It's the same story, just different parcel.
Does it have access, though? I don't think that one has access.
It has roadside access. As you... drive along Oak Road up here, it has an access on this side right here. And depending on where you are, it goes out fairly flat and then it just drops off. But this is where I say, with enough engineering and money, I mean, we have homes in the city that have double basements so that they can get down to foundation, or they can get down to bedrock on the foundation. So it's not unprecedented, right, even in our own community. So I mean, any decision you make will have repercussions.
Part of the thought that I had was, and I don't live right by here, but I went up and I drove and I parked at the top side.
Are you talking about up here?
The upper part, not the lower partial. Partial in discussion tonight.
Okay.
I went up my park there, and I looked down the steep hill.
So you're talking?
Right there. And then I went and drove around the corner, and I looked at the enormous undeveloped lot on the end. And it's designated open space.
Correct.
It is utterly useless to me and 99% of the residents of Cedar Hills. There is no gainer to anybody except the people within 100 yards of that space. And it's not beautiful. Like, it's not beautiful. It's weeds. And you can make comments, I'm going to finish my statement. In any way, if those two lots, and the one is owned by somebody, and it's a lot, right? That's a built lot. But the other lot, in any way, if it was just developed and beautified, if there was grass and some trees, you put a picnic table there and it would be useful to somebody. But right now, short of kids on their bicycles, I don't see, and I did not see any trails of kids on their bicycles using it. I'm trying to understand what good it's doing the city looking like that. And so, you know, from my viewpoint is open space, let's put a trail down the whole length of the thing and let people walk their dogs down or something. I mean, do something. That has beauty, and that costs money, and it's in the development plan. This is a development plan for potentially maybe 7 years from now.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you touched on it. I don't even remember what you said. It's just that the trail is in play.
Okay.
And that's always been the vision of this park, is kind of a walking trail.
You give me a walking trail, you can come down, connect from the upper road there, curl around, walk down the trail.
Right here.
Yeah.
Connecting Sandalwood, Joe.
But you'd have to have stairs to go down there, so you'd have to curl around. That's pretty steep right there.
Well, you'd come
around
there, do something.
We should have to then have the neighbors removed there and approached.
Be a trail. I don't know. It depends on where you want the trail. It depends on the grades. It depends on, because any trail we make is going to have to be ADA accessible. And so there are certain slopes that we're required to meet. And,
right.
We're going to go, if let's say that we were putting in trail, we would go where we needed to go, regardless of what anyone had placed in the way, if it was on the city's property, if this were city property, and that was being developed that way.
That was my problem. Yes.
Some of the beautification of this,
come on up to Mike.
That was part of the argument 6 months ago, is taking it out of the PF designation and giving it into the R1, 11, whatever it is,
yes,
was so that it could be kept up. And right at this point,
the city can't enforce it because it's PF. And so because of that, it just stays weak. And the owner has no responsibility, no need to keep it up. And so that was one of the questions. And we only have a few of us here today. We had 70 last time.
I was here for that.
Yeah. And so, you know, we kind of thought this was kind of, because it went to the city council, and the city council, I can't remember where it, you know, got yanked before it finally made the decision on it. But we really do want it to look nice. We don't want it to be a pile of weeds. And if it gets that designation change that stays open space and someone takes care of it, we're great. But we do want it to be a walking path and have something that, just like behind Cedar Ridge, you know, with a little path. I mean, it could be beautiful and could be used by people who walk around the city right now. The Parks and Trails Committee could do something there to make it look nice. It's just like across the street, I was talking with them, you know, there's no sidewalk across the street on Oak Road from down the hill. We just put some gravel there and made it look nice. I say gravel, I'm talking decorative rocks. But you could just put a pathway through there and make it look nice and be an addition to the city. And that's what we're really looking for. Thank you.
We did change our meeting ordinance so we could go out and notify them.
Yeah.
And I believe, Jenny, correct me if I'm wrong, we already notified.
Yeah, Mr. Parsons can notify.
Still earlier than that.
And then, so it does not need to be rezoned for that purpose.
No, we felt that there were simpler ways to address the problem than rezoning it into the residential at that time. That was the issue at hand. That was the issue that,
right,
that the planning commission recommended rezone. When the application got full, but in order to address the concern, we just went in and looked at our weed abatement code. That's
the issue. So, I mean, with the proposed setup here, there still wouldn't be any open space. All this property would just be absorbed by the neighbors.
Correct.
And it would all just be part of the residential.
Correct. Zone. And let's play a really fun game called Subdivide My Lot. any decision you guys make would then have unintended consequences.
Sure.
Right. And see, I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, but this is the R11000 zone, and like I've said before, and I stand by my quote that with enough money and enough engineering, you can do just about anything you want. Well, let's say you dedicate land. Well, there could be the fact that you then give people enough land where they can develop a flat lot. There are other things at play here. I met with a number of the residents. The whole roads were there. Mr. Ray Lane, who lives up here in the corner, was there. Mr. Gardner was there as well. And I brought this up as a concern of mine. Should a land be dedicated to homeowners, then you could end up seeing flag lots back there, which I don't want to say it's likely. I really don't think that's likely, but it's a possibility. And as property changes hands, those sentiments change over time. I think Steve and Hank, you kind of alluded to that. Time changes, and how properties to be used.
Well, and to be honest, if we're talking about people who lived here for in excess of 30 years.
Right.
30 years from now, I'm looking at those lower lots. If two people have been deeded each half of that, one buys out his neighbor, puts a flag lot in, it's a great lot, too. It's big. And 30 years from now, it's not you, it's your kids, your grandkids owning it, and so you are opening that door.
So that's why I say you do have to be cognizant of some of the consequences of what you're recommending one way or another. I mean, I really don't feel like this is a cut and dry issue. This is, what was the word you used?
Conundrum?
That's a good word, though. That's what I'm saying. It's complicated.
Part of the problem with, I agree with everything you said about trails and whatnot, but that's not going to happen unless the city owns its property. The city doesn't own the property, so in the meantime, if there's not some kind of compromise, no one's going to be happy.
And the market price of this kind of prohibits the city from buying it at this point. So
that's my view. When I speak to the council about prioritizing items in the budget, I try to maximize the utility of the funds that you're given. And quite frankly, the price point that they're asking for in this, the price point is great for a single family lot. It's terrible for a trailer. That's just my honest take. I don't feel like it's the best use of city funds to pay for it at that price.
And a proposal that somehow deeds the excess property to private neighbors isn't going to accomplish open space.
But also the rule can't be contingent on that education.
That's right. Well, for me, the possibility that maybe something would change in 7 years is enough reason to probably deny it. That's what I see. And Mr. Jones's proposal was better than the last time. This issue came before us, but it still has too many pitfalls potentially.
And
go ahead.
Truthfully, you could see them as pitfalls or as opportunity. I mean, to improve that land, and you know, what is the highest and best use of that property? Is it a trail? Is it six single family homes? Is it, what is the highest and best use of that?
I'm thinking more in terms of unintended consequences.
There's not a simple solution.
There's not.
There really is. I know it's kind of a cop out answer, and I apologize. And
the other thing is, like, every time that there is a proposal, we have to sit here and go through it again. I mean, that's the end game here. We have to talk about it. I mean, that's why we sit.
That's why we pay you guys the big bucks.
Oh.
You guys get paid the big bucks now?
Yes. Go ahead.
I just wanted to mention the first time it really occurred to me what community I moved into. We were talking about that spot on the street as being not beautiful, not being used by people, not beautiful, not worthy of being in Cedar Hills. That's my dream. The weekend after we bought the property, it was dusk, and I was driving up that hill, and I came around that corner, and there was deer hanging out there. And I thought, how lucky am I to be in a community that deer are comfortable in? To me, that property there is useful, that fact. It is useful that it is not built upon. Probably the reason why it was on there is that it is private property. It's supposed to be set aside in the general plan as open space. And I would like to see it renewed in that space. Thank you.
Just as a humorous comment, I can guarantee that that's not the only place that deer congregate in Cedar Hills, and my garden will attest to that.
Get too many.
I second that.
But if they eat over there, they don't eat my yard.
I'm by Walmart. They're down there eating my food. I will entertain a motion at this point.
Well, I'm
really
glad
that
you never
repeated
that.
Jenna, weren't you going to follow up on a couple of items with the city attorney on this?
I guess the biggest question in my mind is what ability does the city have to, should they rezone it, to limit it to, basically it's getting clarification on how do you mitigate any unintended consequences. At least the ones that you can identify. But I think the two big ones I can think of are, can the city rezone this and say one lot, even though it's all in the R11,000, it has the potentiality for, you know, a higher number of lots than that. And two, about the limitations on future private development, should it be dedicated to the adjacent. Those are my two big concerns with rezoning it.
We just can't.
And I think without those, I think the word not really able to do anything other than say no.
I'll just create it. Yeah. All I have to say no, and then continue to pursue.
Say no, they're making people.
I mean, we either say no or we table it until we get those answers. Those are kind of, I think, our best options.
I'll make a motion to continue that and consolidation.
Discussion about that? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, Chandler?
Can you follow?
Is it possible to come up?
Yeah. Just as a clerical matter, the meeting next month will have to be a special meeting.
It is, that's early. What's that? Week earlier, right?
Yeah, we're going to have to do a week earlier to run the town. I think it is the 19th, not the city council.
It will be the
calendar up there. But there will be a special meeting. It won't be a regular scheduled meeting.
I don't know what else we would do it.
Looks like, right?
Well, the 19th is city council.
City council meeting, so I think.
Would it have to be the 12th?
Ooh.
No, I think we were going to shoot for
later in the week, right? We were going to do it Wednesday or Thursday.
The 14th or
something?
The 20th or 21st?
Let me look at my calendar.
You sent that out to us earlier. I'm not sure.
I don't. Okay.
Go back, go to bed, everyone, while you can.
All right.
Where are we?
I think we are next. Review recommendation for the Wardell subdivision.
The item formerly known as 7.
There was a change because there came in there after
yes.
In the time for the yes. Sewer.
Do you have any of this?
I am. One of the things I want to start off with is a bit of a background. Mr. Wardell, who lives at 9730 North Main Road, he would like to subdivide this parcel.
Hit the line. The line button.
So this parcel was initially 1.16 acres, and he wants to divide it into two separate parcels. This being about 34,000 square feet, and this being a little under 16,000 square feet. This plot would be identified as the Wardell subdivision. One of the current buildings he would plan on this portion, he would retrofit to meet all building and zoning code requirements for that. With the construction down on Canyon Road, this would allow for sewer lines to be installed as they widen that road. A considerable amount of homes in this area are also on septic systems, and they will have the opportunity for that point to connect to those. Mr. Wardell indicated that. And correct me if I'm wrong, if you have approval for a site and access on this, you do have approval for that. On this, he also indicated that he's going to include curb, gutter, and sidewalk on this area. The subdivision would be in an R1 zone, which with the setbacks on this particular piece Typically, for an R15-1000, is a 30-foot front setback, but this would not be the case because this is abutted to a Canyon Road. Gibbs would be set back 80 foot from center line of Canyon Road. So he would have to adhere to those. Side setbacks would be a minimum of 10 feet on one side, combined total of 24 on the other side. Rear setbacks on this lot is 25 feet from the rear lot line. These would be two single-family homes. He plans to build a garage, quite correct, and parking areas on this particular lot here. The planning commission, we did approve the preliminary plans on this back on February 27th. The city council approved them on March 6th. Currently, this final plan is under review with our city engineer, Bowen Collins and Associates. We have any red lines and minor details that need to be done with this lot.
It would be prior to this June 19th meeting.
Okay.
I think it gives your engineer enough time to incorporate all the changes. They're already doing it.
And staff at this time recommends that we approve this Wardell subdivision upon the approval of the city engineering to address all red line issues and any documentations associated with this final plat.
Okay, this is very likely something that engineering's looked over. I just have my two very simple comments on this. First of all, a smaller lot that drive looks like it goes across a pretty steep portion of land there. I'm just basing it on how many contour lines I'm looking at here. Engineering will have to approve that and make sure that it's acceptable and safe.
Yeah,
I'm sure that they've addressed that.
And just to note, we do allow steeper driveways for shorter distances, so this would fall into that criteria.
Great. The second thing is the proposed culinary water looks like it's right, like the meter would be right on the edge of that drive. Is that wise?
No. We try to keep any water meter outside of the cement. It tends to freeze.
Yeah.
And ruin if it's in the cement.
If it's
in the cement, there's ways to protect it. So if there's no other option, we can live with it and we can work around it. But we prefer it to not be.
And it only has to be a foot or two outside of it to be okay.
Right, red line is 2 foot.
2 foot, right. There we go. All right. Those were the only comments I have.
I'm going to put it further in my hand.
Oh, you're making a motion.
Yes.
We got a motion outstanding. Add to a second before we do that. Okay, discussion?
No.
Any changes other than engineering? Not that I'm
aware of.
No.
There are quite a few engineering needs to be addressed.
Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right.
Okay, when are we supposed to do a public hearing on that? How did nobody sign up for it? We didn't do a public hearing on that one.
We have to do it in the next
one. Is that one public here?
No. We need to do a public hearing on that. Right now?
Yeah. That was one of the items we had to do a public hearing on.
If that's one of the items we have to have a public hearing on, then I have to notice that. I apologize. Is anyone here to speak to that? No. Thank you for taking my straight direction.
Trying. My notes are kind of a mess right now, so we'll just all work together on this.
The next item that I have on this is to signs in public facilities.
And there was a public hearing on that as well.
Sure. No, make the presentation.
Okay.
Please.
This is to address the desire. Can we change that?
Yeah.
Okay, this is actually to address the digital marquee that Cedar Ridge Elementary has a desire to install a friendly school. Currently, this is what the sign there looks like now. You can tell it's a disrepair. It does, you know, it's probably, what would you say, 5 feet in height?
From the base to the very bottom. It's not a very, you've driven by the Cedar Ridge.
It's only 5 feet.
It's not
from there to look down.
So currently our code sign does not allow for digital type marquees in our code. Staff has added an additional section of E, signs in public facility zones, that would allow for digital type signage for schools, public schools in the PF zone, public facility zone. One of the concerns that we previously discussed is how to regulate this type of signage, such as being able to turn the sign on and off. So the other one was limiting the levels of brightness. It'd be a positive thing for the community without being a nuisance to the surrounding properties. So we have addressed, hopefully addressed, most of these issues and a little bit more as far as setbacks, height elevation, specific verbiage that would include digital signage to allow for public schools only. Message would be specific to the schools and the activities within that school and would allow for public service announcements. Type of lighting such as diffuse or indirect lighting would direct away from surrounding properties, not allowing for flashing, rotating, animated full video, scrolling, strobing, racing, blinking, changing color fade in and out of messages, which would distract drivers, especially as they are going through this area. Hours of allowability to regulate this, and this would all be contingent on being owned, operated, and maintained by the school. So they would have full access to be able to operate this, with the exception of the public service announcements, if we wanted to do that. Like I say, they would be responsible for all messaging. Staff is open to modifications, recommendations to signage.
I do have a quick question. As far as the messaging permitted activities to the school, what about during elections?
That would fall under public service.
That's what I was wondering. Okay. That would be helpful.
Correct me if I'm wrong, it could be toward a specific candidate.
Correct.
It would just have to be.
Yeah. It's not public service.
No one can buy ad space on that during their campaign. Jenny, sorry.
No one can buy ad space of any kind.
Yes.
Okay. We have the Cedar Ridge. did you want to say anything?
Well, I just have a question about what was just read. Did I understand that correctly? That the sign could scroll or could
we just have to
flash for
this time? It would be a static message that changes every 8 seconds or so.
So the static message would be for 8 seconds.
Okay. We can probably. So it's probably striking out scrolling. I've seen a lot of marquee scrolling signs.
That's typically
where
the
one comes in and then it scrolls into the next
no,
message.
No, the words are just scrolling across.
Yeah.
Like, you've ever gone down to American Fort Junior and passed by that, we would probably use something very similar to that. And that part of that's just the technology that they offer when buying that.
The scrolling is also meant to scroll at the speed that you're driving so that it's not a distraction.
That would necessitate a change to that.
I think you'd have to strike out.
And we would definitely make sure that it was turned off at certain hours.
Is there an obvious control? I think 9 o'clock was the cutoff.
Yeah.
The best thing about this is it allows us to, we can control it from home if we need to. If you need to get a hold of that social media, you know, we can change information there. It's also
program,
right? Yeah, we just put the message in and then it flashes up, which is really nice. Not having to break when you're climb up on the ladder or have kids climb up in their trucks, which we have video of, and changing the words.
Oh, I noticed a few of those words last year.
Yeah. So that's the benefit of it. So there's a nice antique candle feature of that.
Underneath E, signs in the public facilities zone, we've got A, B, and then 2. So I'm trying to, I'm a little worried about the numbering on that.
No, this is not complete. This is just basically a layout.
Great, okay.
Yes, it'll be cleaned up.
So under E, 2. 30 feet and 20 feet are adjacent to each other. 30 feet are written out, 20 feet is in parentheses. Clearly have a conflict there.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's 20 feet.
Item 5A.
Or is it 30? It
says both.
I'm
actually
saying
you
have a question.
We can. Yeah.
Oh, no, I see. We had talked about. I see where it is. Yeah, that's my bad. We had talked about 30 feet to match what the commercial zone is.
Yeah.
It felt like that was way too high. So I typed in 20, but then I didn't change the words. Clerical.
Well, there's one thing.
20.
It's fine. Clerical's fine. It's just.
My bad.
And then.
That would be a huge sign. Was
30 feet.
Even 20 is pretty tall.
Right. But weren't they proposing like 15 or 11 or?
They're just proposing, I'm saying they're proposing to just replace the sign that's currently there.
Yeah, and then they're actually bringing it, it's not going to be that wide of digital, it'll be a lot shorter.
Then no taller than that?
Well, I thought it was supposed to be taller to keep people from poking it or something. Wasn't there some kind of
Well, I think
access,
they said with the new one, it's got a
access question.
Cover on it that's real light.
So you can just take it and cover.
Okay. So then I see the next one, 3 there, says marquee digital signs may be allowed in public facility zone, which is great, that's what we're talking about. But then under J, prohibited signs, marquee signs are listed as prohibited. So we're saying they're allowed in one place and prohibited in another.
We can add in J that there is, with the exception of the public facility zone.
Perfect. And then the only other thing I have is what was already mentioned with the transitions. Yeah.
Okay.
Florian?
No, I have these rock modules and I didn't see them, but everything I can see out.
When I read through this, I was still awake. Actually,
the case anymore?
I read the, no, after this, I went directly to the settlement. I tried to read the entire document. It's not that it wasn't good reading, it's just that it bleeds.
Is this designed to run during the summer months at all?
There's nothing specific that we haven't called that we could give again for summer.
No, they would be able to run it.
Reading programs, we have
We have our library times, we have our registration times.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be great. Actually, public service announcements there, T-ball registration or something. Yeah,
there are some district regulations with that.
Oh.
It has to be 6 years on city for us to advertise it. So it could be like a for profit. It's offered that we have 0 or something. But it was something that was sponsored by the city. So we can host it.
That'd be nice.
That would be nice.
And then, sorry, could you read one more time the, I just want to make sure I understand the regulation of the sign that it's actually on if this passes. So, talk to animation, or can you read that again?
You got it. So, sign is owned and operated and maintained by the public schools. Any message displayed on digital should relate to the property. Sign does not illuminate into adjacent residential lots, only indirect and diffuse lighting signs are permitted in the PS zone. Lights are not an integral part, and sign must be directed away from surrounding properties and oncoming traffic. No flashing or rotating lights are permissible. Electronic displays shall not include animation, full video, full motion video, flashing, I'm going to strike out scrolling at that point, strobing, racing, blinking, changing the color, fading in and out,
in any manner limiting movement or any other means not providing constant illumination. Each transistor shall be illuminated for at least 8 seconds before transitioning to the message. Operation of hours is between 9 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Did we create this code from scratch or did we borrow it?
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
So with the, purchasing the digital sign, with changing of color, does that mean like we want it mono the color? So we can have like a yellow
screen. I think it's transitioning colors the same.
So like fading in and out.
The yellow on the same words or something.
Yeah,
try that.
No, so just not flashing, but that's understandable. We want that. So, but we do want something that, but just one color out of my.
Yeah.
It can be full color, it just can't be animated.
Not like blinking back and forth colors, you know.
Exactly. I just want to make sure I don't, you know, want to make sure. I think the object here is just, they consider it just running properties and not running traffic. These are our biggest concerns.
And in this specific instance, we do have another school living in the property limit, so they could piggyback on this.
Correct.
Where it's facing east and west, you're really not facing in anybody's yard or front window or anything.
I will say, though, that we did hear from, I heard from 4th Street residents right now, that light that is on goes right into my
room.
And all honesty, compared to this sign, the new one will be less intrusive because it will be turned off.
We have no control turning it off and on right now. It's just when it's on, it's just on.
Oh, they had said the previous administration had agreed to turn it off.
Well,
that's
something
that's been confused to me when I spoke to our custodian.
I mean, that's just a switch.
Is there a timer on there? You could probably put a timer on it.
I'm not sure how that works.
You won't have to.
Have a timer on.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll not have access, remote access. It will have remote access, so I think we can have it.
I was a little worried. The transitions, as written, are pretty restrictive, and I think, I mean, even for they're pretty restrictive. We're trying to avoid the flash and the garish stuff.
Like on I-15.
Yeah, like on I-15.
Right.
Because distracted drivers on the freeway going 70 miles an hour. But the point being, per se, obviously it's just by a school. It's, you know, when you get kids coming by, that's really good. I will.
Okay, I move that we recommend the proposed amendments to the Cedar Hills Municipal Code 10-5-6 relating to signage in the PSL now that we had other modifications.
Minus the scrolling.
Oh, minus the scrolling.
And the adjustment for the lobby marquees and the sign height.
Oh, and the sign height. And the marquee. And the marquee.
We have that extension.
I second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Excellent.
Okay, we did have a public hearing on that.
Oh, we did. Public hearing. Is there anyone here to speak for this? Gretchen, I have to do that in the right order. We have to do the hearing before I call for a motion, so yell at me, sir.
Okay. I'll try.
Thank you.
We're all tired. What the heck is
Mike? We're really close. Let's, guys, we're good. We're pushing through. Item 10, review recommendation on amendments to city code regarding accessory apartments.
As recommended by the Planning Commission, these recommendations made some adjustments on this. Hopefully we've addressed all the issues. If not, or if I don't address them, please let me know. The wording concerning owner-occupied that was in section 5, previously it was down in section C, which stipulated the owner occupancy. We moved that and incorporated that up with item one.
It's not recognizing my.
That presents that it resides to the residents for at least a temporary absence or at least a 1 year prior to the temporary absence.
Where would that be?
And it would have to meet the following criteria. So we feel like it, we brought that up, added that in at that point. Under term single family duplication, that was removed. The word annual was struck on section.
I have a fingerprint there.
One, B, the registration fees. That hasn't been determined yet, but that was what it's going to be for registration fees. We're still working that out. Under section B1, or excuse me, Mr. Dredge noted that the last meeting you addressed detached accessory apartment and access to these. Those would fall under supplementary development. As far as access going into the properties, that's where that would fall under. So any access. I appreciate feedback on any of these and clarification, and hopefully I addressed Steve here. Problems with the multiple rooms that were rented there. So what we did was we basically struck out room rentals on those. So under this, we an accessory unit that contains a studio or a single bedroom, we struck that out. We're going to define each of it as a separate unit. It won't be a room shared. Where that will fall under clarification is under the family definition of the family as a single family unit. That is how we will define that in that section.
Which is no more than four unrelated persons?
No more than four unrelated individuals.
Yes. So currently our current code allows for four unrelated individuals to live together as a single family housekeeping unit. So if you were to rent out one room, you would fall under our current family code rather than any accessory apartment code.
But I could have my eight related people and an unrelated person too, right?
Correct.
Okay.
If I believe some requirements for format, yes.
Right. Yeah, I just felt like we were merging two kind of different.
I think it just separates it. I think it clarifies it a little bit. This is already a complicated issue, and I think that maybe sometimes we have things that maybe overcomplicate it. So I think separating that out is a good idea. No.
Not my house.
That sounds good.
Just grammatical, practical things. On I-1, there's some spaces missing and owner has a. And then under L, parking. The minimum of two off-street parking spaces shall be provided in addition to those larger parks. Is there a necessity to have that phrase in there? I like the shall be provided or something. But maybe it doesn't
mean in the second sentence it says shall be provided, so I maybe just clean that up and merge those two sentences into that.
Yeah, there's no verb in the first sentence. That was my point. I read from a capital to a period and there was no verb.
Right. I mean we
so
could just merge those
if you
two.
Merge the two
simplify them all.
That would be great, in all for simplicity, but also grammar.
Were you an engineer?
No.
It's really funny.
I'm an engineer, though. I have things to be
precise.
A certain way.
Precise, yeah.
So, we had a discussion, unrelated to this, but related to this. Actually with Mayor Reese. In the PD1 zone, we did not had talked about not allowing accessory apartments.
given that the units are so densely packed and parking is so limited.
That is still the case.
Do we throw that in under the PB1 verbiage or under here?
No. If you were to open up all of the residential zones and look at the conditional uses that are allowed as conditional uses, you'd see accessory apartments except for in the PD1 code. So we already identify it as a conditional use, but it's not listed as an allowable conditional use in the zone. There's also language in the PD1 zone that any use that's not expressly if it's not listed, it's expressly prohibited.
So we're covered.
We're covered.
Thank you. That's what I wanted. Good.
Is there any other questions or concerns? Right. So I guess I need this.
Be clear. Is this? Are we publicly?
No.
No public hearing.
Thank you.
Where do you get it now?
I finally remember. I'll entertain a motion.
Don't you guys want to go home?
Brave soul, please. Well, this actually doesn't require talking about the amendments, so.
Plus probably 10 more things.
Actually, yes.
Discussion item.
I'm going to be fast.
Lay it on us.
In an effort to precede any applications in the SC1 zone for use in the mixed-use overlay, we would like to discuss with you the direction you'd like to see staff and CECO in terms of drafting code, limiting the size of building footprints for uses that do not primarily generate sales tax in that zone. Example, a indoor control storage unit will generate property tax, no sales tax, but they may have a small unit inside the store that sells boxes. That's not the primary function of the building, much like the primary function of a tobacco specialty business was 45% from the sales of tobacco. So what we're going to do is we're going to draft code that limits the size of those buildings to about what was proposed by Charlie Industries, about 35,000 square feet building footprint. But we just would not want to see that entire ratio store zone being used for one purpose.
And what's the ratio of building to open space? Is it still
30%?
30%
open space? That's
retention pond is at 30%. That would be
5.5% if you don't want
to. It'll be grass. Where it's going to end up is it will end up as a grass exposure.
Yeah, it's 5.5%.
So there will still, it's not going to be only open space.
Honestly, it will be very, like if you look at Walmart's open space versus the open space that they're going to be doing here, this is actually usable open space. So it'll be a grass field where you can actually go
through Walmart. We're more inclined to say, yeah, let's have two of those, but I understand.
I don't know how much you want to discuss this tonight, but we are going to be drafting the code. Is there any special direction you'd like to see the staff go for that?
Smaller. The size of the building, you have an overall footprint. Obviously, 35,000.
It's a pretty large building, but the reason I want to go 35,000 is that should the use change,
it's still a usable building for other retail purposes. If you limit it to something that's very small, all of a sudden you're left with an abandoned shell of a building in your commercial.
Anything we can do about height?
We did, didn't we?
Except the fact that it's 35 feet.
35 yeah. feet, just like the hall of residential.
It's the same as a hall.
It's the same as the residential.
So it's not receiving any special treatment. Okay. Any other thoughts?
Did you want to have a discussion about the percentage utilization to make it?
Draw some numbers for me, because we're kind of going from scratch on this one. I would say that if its primary function is driven by sales tax, then over 50% of its revenue has to generate sales tax. To me, that would make it primarily sales tax, more than 50%.
I thought we kind of already addressed this in the design guidelines for the C1 and like back.
We do somewhat, but I mean, let's say you have two options in front of you. One was a giant building that was 100% sales tax generating. To me, that's a very different scenario. It's a very different scenario than if it's a smaller building that doesn't generate any sales tax. Now, sales tax is the primary purpose of the SC1 zone, but it is a purpose of the SC1 zone.
It is, but I mean,
no purpose is more given more weight than another, right?
Not under the code, no.
Yeah.
But we're saying that this allows for uses. So if you put in that indoor climate control storage, you're not taking up the entirety of the overlay zone for one big indoor use because it's allowed. No. And there's a demand for it. They technically probably could, but by having this discussion, we're proposing code and we're preceding any application.
Well, I mean, they could just build three buildings that were indoor storage then. And
I actually don't know that they could.
How close can these buildings be?
There's no setback requirements other than setback to an adjacent residential area. It's kind of all just laid out.
Is that 30?
I don't know off the top of my head.
20. What are other folks doing about this?
I'm going to the city discuss this.
Maybe it's just the brain damage from the other stuff we've done tonight, but I'm not there. I mean, I don't like this. These buildings may change uses at any time, right? I could sell this to, you know, whoever and put something else. Why limit the building because it may become a sales tax generating asset here, you know, in 3 years.
And so okay.
Right. So. Why
a grocery store is like over 40,000 square feet, right?
Yeah.
You've got possibly two footprints going in there, 35, so you have 70,000 square feet right there. I don't think you'd want to go any bigger. You've already got 70.
In the open.
Yeah.
But that's typically where an anchor type building would
right.
go.
Right.
Just one other thing to note that when you guys see a concept from the purchasers of that property, you're not going to see. I'm just preparing you for this. You're not going to see building footprints, the initial concept. What we're going to do is we're going to do it much like a plat map, where they're going to carve out the parcels. And they're going to show you the public improvements that they can put in. And then as each parcel comes in, they will go through the approval process. So rather than having a conversation about every building all at once, we're going to have a conversation on each building separately.
Right.
Focus the conversation
a
little bit better.
The developer doesn't have people lined up.
And even if he does,
they
still have to get individual approvals.
He does. They still have to get individual approvals, but at the same time, rather than building a shell and saying, hey, come fill this shell, he's seeking out the tenants and saying what building works for you guys. So trying to cater to
their. Let me try design guidelines.
As long as they're
correct.
But the apartment could have more than one unit.
Correct.
So it could be a building for
it. It could. Yeah, you're right, it could. But they're going to kind of parcel it off how they see fit. And so don't be shocked when you don't see the building on that. You should see the parcels.
These aren't really the worst chairs, does it?
We have the concept plan for us already, right? Concept?
Yeah, it's going to change up.
Not
necessarily. There can be some major changes between concepts.
So I was just his typographical. Right. That
they have still the list.
I won.
Oh, just with
the space. Space. Okay. Thank you.
A lot of them kind of.
And then L. Let's see. It was actually J. They talked about L for parking. Oh, was it parking?
Yeah, no, it's parking.
We're not going to talk about that.
In her motion, she said I and J.
Actually, it was I and L.
See, if it's not one of the main access roads,
J wasn't.
We're going to talk about the main access roads, how the utilities run through those, where the open spaces.
So the access roads,
the main roads will be there.
The entrances.
But there could be there could be a road. You're not going to see those other. You probably won't see those other roads that went behind the buildings.
Go ahead, I'll buy it tomorrow.
I'm talking
it's
about.
It's going to take at least an hour and a half to get to sleep.
Yeah.
No matter how tired I am, it's just the way it has to be. And actually, I don't fall asleep unless I take my medication.
Okay. Thank you for your evening.
I will entertain one more motion.
I'll say that.
Cool.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Yes, you're welcome.